welcome to part two of your birthday astrology conversation. So, this is a big time in your life. By a big time, I mean that it is a time that will stand out on the scale of your whole life as a time when you fully took charge of who you are, but also that in hindsight, I think you'll see that there is a sense of scale that it's necessary to see this time with when, let's just say that looking back, you will get a sense of the scale of this phase of your personal history. By this phase, let's just use the focus time of the Uranus-Pluto square, let's say 08 through 15, right? It's like a seven-year stretch of time that will stand out as a major before and after phase, with many little mini before and after phases. We're coming out of one of them now. And it's not always easy to see the scale of a certain time in your life, to see how important something was when you are in the midst of it. Certain people with great self-awareness and who have an innate understanding of their dharma, or you might think of it as their original instructions or the choices they made, why they're here, can see things on a sense of scale that others often cannot. One of the ways we can see the scale is with astrology. And you are having all of these outer planet transits to your sun, at the very least. Other planets are involved. So, you know, there are the ongoing transits of Uranus and Pluto, and those have been joined the past year by Mars and Jupiter, which has done a few things. I'm going to describe that coming in with a little bit of hindsight first. I think that right now, understanding where you've just been is one of the most important things to help you understand where you are about to be. And let's take one transit as an example, Uranus going across your 10th house. That's Aries, and the 10th house is the house of reputation and of notoriety, reputation, fame, respect, leadership, admiralty. And I would dare to say that for most people, this is not a very active house. Their concept of what they could be tends to be smaller than the 10th house. And so when there's an outer planet transit going across there, that transit can suggest great potential, but it takes having a sense of scale to see that potential. So one of the things that Uranus going across the 10th house would describe would be an innovative, groundbreaking time, not just in your personal career, but also in the impact that your work has on your profession and on the world around you. Now, who can really see that? Who has a sense of, it might be self-esteem, it might be a grand vision that can encompass really the sensation of making an impact on their entire profession? Another example is Pluto going across your seventh house. This could be a very troubling transit for some people. It could indicate a time of instability, but it can also indicate a time of rising above the horizons and of rising above the foundations and coming into a sense of visibility and recognizing the potential for what you might call profound mutual impact, not only in your personal relationships, but certainly in your personal relationships, but also profound mutual impact with the wider world. But this too requires what you might think of as a sense of mission that runs very deeply, a sense of self-respect, and yet this is what you have going on. This transit is happening, and it's happening in concert with Uranus across the 10th house, and these transits are far from over. I'm going to be talking about them in at least the next two annual editions. And then because these transits can have such a long-term effect, it can take them years to build up and reach their peak, and then they're coming down from that peak for years, having some of the most profound effects. For example, in the history of the 1960s, the Uranus-Pluto conjunction was technically over in 1966. That conjunction happened over the course of only about 9 months. There were three events in 1965 and 1966, but many of the things that we associate the era of the 1960s with happened in the late 1960s, in, 67, 8, 9, and 70. And so those years were under the profound influence of the Uranus-Pluto conjunction, and we may yet see something like that happen after the Uranus-Pluto square reaches its seventh and final aspect in March of 15, effects that we would have predicted for happening during the square. And so the effects of these transits is far from over in your life. But here's what just happened. Outer planet transits are greatly enhanced by inner planet transits. They really push the experience and push the issues. And so you've been living with these outer planet transits for a while. Not that easy to see, not that easy to understand, and not that easy to put to work. Except that in 2013, 2014, two much closer planets got into the action, Jupiter and Mars, and those planets provided something of a tangibility factor for the outer planet transits. And Mars, in particular, making this rapid sequence of many aspects to all three, Jupiter, Uranus, and Pluto, from your fourth house, compelled you to slip into, to take charge of, to, let's see what my notes say. I kind of try to explain this to myself in my notes just a second ago. It pushed the issues. It gave you a sense of the reality of the potential of these transits and then pushed the issues. And what's so interesting is that it pushed the issues from the house where you seek security, but this year we're least likely to find it, or seemingly least likely to find it, which compelled you to find your confidence and not find it as some abstract thing, but to slip into it like a glove, to be able to reach in from the inside and embody your confidence. And there with this was the, say, evidence of, or demonstration of how it is always through direct experience that we find our confidence. It's never an abstract thing. It's never just a concept or a notion when confidence is real. When confidence is real, it is always about the experience of that confidence being real. We know from confirmation in the world. We know because we achieved something or endured something or became something or attempted something and succeeded or failed first and succeeded second, that we have that ability to really trust our potential. And so if nothing else, this immediate time in your life, I would say, has given you the ability to trust your potential on some level, perhaps a very clear and distinct level, and now to be able to move on understanding the trajectory that your life is on, understanding what is possible, but now taking the freedom to do so, to experience these transits much more on your own terms. Now, the way this looks astrologically is that starting in late December of 2013, there was this Grand Cross, and the Grand Cross was focused on your sign because of the presence of Jupiter in your sign. And that went on, and it reached a second peak in April of 2014. Then what happened is that Mars and Jupiter both stationed direct, and the two arms of the four broke free from the cross and have moved forward in their own direction. It's as if they've become a kind of a spin-off story of the Grand Cross, and they are now going to be proceeding in a kind of rapid evolutionary mode and telling their own new story. So you might think of Jupiter and Mars as elements of yourself that have undergone an initiation, a test of some kind, and have proven themselves in some way, and are now going to proceed forward, having tangible evidence, tangible proof of what you are capable of. And these two planets arrive in houses that are very nice places to have them. The first one that is going to arrive is Jupiter, leaving your sign and entering Leo. Now, as I said in the marketing promo for this birthday reading, that this is not about losing Jupiter in your sign, but rather gaining Jupiter in your second house. And the second house is the house of resources. And one thing that you have proven to yourself, or have had proven to you in some way, is that you are nothing if not resourceful, that you've been able to come up with these resources to do all these things and support these people and to, if nothing else, get by, if nothing else, just survive and be able to keep on going. And now you have Jupiter entering the house in your chart that is specifically associated with resources, that being the second house, or Leo. Now, it is very fortunate to have Leo as the second house. Leo is a little bit of astrology that is in many ways just limitless, and part of that is that it is associated with the sun. The sun is the center of the solar system that we live in, and it's the thing around which all the other planets orbit. When we look at astrology involving planets, some astrology involves fixed stars, but the ruling planet of Leo is a fixed star. And so there is a hub-like quality to Leo, and it is almost as if you have access to not just your own resources, but to a vast well of collective resources, and yet it is coming in through your chart as something that is very much your own creation, your own reality, your own experience. And now Jupiter is ingressing this sign in your chart. Jupiter is in itself a miniature solar system. It is in itself a cosmos of resources. It embraces anything from material wealth to knowledge and wisdom to culture, especially international culture. It involves all kinds of exchanges with other cultures, particularly travel. And this is going to be very handy to have in your second house. Now, one of the reasons for this is that in modern psychological astrology, the benefit of the second house is self-worth. We live in a time when there are very serious issues around self-worth. I believe that it may be the single most important issue of our time in terms of a spiritual or psychological issue. And by that, I mean that it may be the one responsible for the most misery, and the one that, if we were to address it, would be responsible for creating the most happiness. And right now, it seems like it's very hard to address this issue directly. The lack of self-esteem many people have is used as an excuse to not do anything about the problem. There's also just the sensation of being mired in a sense of worthlessness, which is propagated by our society in many ways. And to some real degree, having Leo in the second place in your chart means that you have a natural immunity to this. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily happy every day and don't go through periods where you doubt yourself and all that. But what it's suggesting is that low for you is a lot higher than low for many other people. In fact, low for you is as high as many other people get on a good day, though it's not really possible for you to know this with a sense of contrast unless you're very astutely observant of what others around you go through, or if you're a therapist of some kind and you spend a lot of time working with people on their self-worth issues. But you are fortunate to have a very high floor and correspondingly high ceiling on this particular issue. And Jupiter ingressing the second house is definitely going to help. Jupiter in your first house has presented the material in a way that is not so abstract. I mean, with first house stuff, it's like, generally, it's coming at you so fast that you don't have time to think about it so much, and it's so directly experienced that you don't have time to tease it out and think about it. By the time you get to discussing self-esteem, you've made it into an abstract concept. But now what you get to experience is the abstract concept as a real thing, because there has been this experience, many, many, many different experiences of basically being tested, basically being going through things that you have not, in the sense of psychological healing, had to demonstrate anything, but in the sense of, I've got to get through this now. I've got to get through this. I must be strong. I must come up with this. This person needs me. I must be strong for them, whatever form that it took. And now you get to absorb that as if you're making a large deposit into your own bank account, and you have confidence that you earned every penny of that money. That is a big difference than someone telling you what you're worth in some abstract way. You now have done this in a direct, bold, and tangible way. A beautiful thing. And so now you get to live again, for an extended period of time, with a demonstration of what is possible when you really do value yourself. And as you value yourself, you're going to value your resources. You could think of what those resources are in many different ways. They include the talents that you have. They include the time that you have. They include your agenda. They include your resources that are material in nature. They include your plans for what you want to do with those resources. They include all of your motives for whatever you're doing that might motivate you. And so this is, in a way, kind of like something unfolding for you and demonstrating what you will be able to do when you fully recognize the worth and value that you have in the universe and to yourself and to other people. Now, with that experiment comes the next experiment right around the time of your solar return, just toward the very end, or I'm not sure if the sun's already moved on into Leo at this point. If it has, it still counts, because there is a lot about the sun's trip through Leo that's going to be influential in your life this year. But the other big inner planet transit, an outgrowth of the Grand Cross for 2014, is Mars moving into Scorpio. And here you get the experiment of what it will feel like to live as a person who is devoted to your passion and to your creativity from the sensation of having a very full battery or bank account to be able to do that, so that it's not likely to be the kind of creativity that involves scraping the bottom in some way, but rather the creativity that comes from having an abundance of talent, an abundance of ideas, an abundance of, if not money, though that is possible, of resources to work from, and recognizing that you have the ability to do anything it is that you want to do. Nothing needs to stop you, and the only thing that you need to lead yourself with is your inherent desire to create something. So stay in touch with that desire, and let that desire make contact with the fact that you have what it takes to do it. So now, having been through all of these really wild experiences of the Grand Cross of 2014, you get to take that and apply that to your life in a way that can be very adventurous. There's also this little thing about Mars in the fifth being about sex, and maybe you figured out that sex is one thing when you've got low self-esteem, and it's another thing entirely when you're feeling good about yourself. When sex or romantic involvement or any kind of, let's say, friendly sexual involvement does not become a way to, let's say, validate you, but rather it is your way of expressing your pre-existing validity, big difference than seeking external validation. And there is the implication that you have plenty of validation to share, and you know how to do it in a spiritually clean way. And so the connection between Mars and Jupiter is the, let's say, to borrow a little bit of New Agey language, the full activation of the connection between self-love and expressing love sexually, Scorpio, fifth house, hard to get more sexual than that, with yourself and with others, from the standpoint of being full and strong, rather than the standpoint of seeking and needing completion. It's a very beautiful setup that you have to experience here. Now, if we combine this with an understanding of what Pluto going through your seventh house has been about, which is, in a phrase, the restructuring of your relationships, in a second phrase, so that they work for you, you can see that you've been opening up yourself and opening up your energy in a way that is going to create has created a conduit for all of this awesome energy to run through. Now, I talk about the fifth as being sexual, but it's also the art studio of the zodiac. And there, you know, for some it's the, you know, paint-spattered art studio with the couch, my favorite kind. And so there is a well of creative passion here. Now, I know there's a lot of people who try to sublimate sexual power into creative power. Oh, I don't need sex. I'll just sculpt. And if that works, that works. I mean, I can, you know, some of these folks create astonishing sculptures and artwork. What I'm proposing is a little bit more holistic, which is that there's not a need to sublimate, but rather a need or a potential anyway for your erotic power and your creative power to feed one another, and to be able to have all of your creativity have an erotic flavor and all of your eroticism have a creative flavor, whether it's overt or not. And the journey of Pluto through your seventh, this constant challenging of tradition that you've been involved with, the dismantling of your own history and getting to that place of understanding where you know that you don't need to do things the way that your grandparents did them, Mm-hmm. Is going to be something that you have, let's say, a freedom that you have earned. Now, speaking of the art studio, the fifth, Scorpio has had in it Saturn for a while, and Saturn is in an interesting pattern of movement right now. It's going to stay in Scorpio through the rest of 2014, except in December. It's going to briefly go into Sagittarius. It's going to retrograde again. Then it's, if I recall correctly, going to spend most of 2015 in Scorpio. And so there is a bridge now being made between your fifth house, Scorpio, and your sixth house, Sagittarius. And this is one of the most productive and useful house cusps of them all. It's also one of the most challenging for most people who struggle to make their creative talents of the fifth house and their passions of the fifth house into something that is workable and pragmatic in the sixth house. And one of the things going on in my theory of houses, which I don't think I've written much about, though I've said it, I've mentioned it from time to time, and I'll mention it again, is that there are the houses and then there are the house cusps. And the houses have, you know, they're all about groupings or confluences of themes, but the house cusps are these transition areas where you start to blend the themes. And so with the cusp between the fifth and the sixth house, we have the creative merging with the healing, the pragmatic, the day-to-day well-being, and ordinary practical work. And naturally, as somebody who basically kind of lives and works in various forms of art and music studios, I would think this is a great place because it happens to be the place where I choose to live. But I think that also, given the number of artists I've worked with who struggle to make their art practical in some way, who want to do what they do as a vocation, not just as a hobby or passion, the fifth, sixth house cusp is an essential place to get familiar with yourself, to work work that line and be able to bring the pragmatic elements of the sixth into the fifth, and to be able to bring the passionate and creative elements of the fifth into the sixth house of well-being and day-to-day living. And so Saturn working this line is giving you a kind of a bridge between these two major topic areas of life that are, at least in my clientele, so crucial to happiness, so much the foundation of happiness. Okay, a couple of other things. I think one of the really most brilliant things about your chart right now is the ninth house. Most astrologers looking at the ninth house would see that Neptune is in the ninth house, and that's all well and good, except that when we add Neptune has an organic spirituality to it. It also can have an organic delusional quality to it. But I think that in the ninth house, especially with Pisces on that house, you have learned that for you, spirituality must be a real thing. Even if you're a religious person, you know that your spirituality is not about your religion. Your religion is some framework. It's some way to express your deeply held beliefs. It's not a thing imposed on you. You need to work the spiritual dimension from the inside. And Neptune is an invitation to do just that. It gives you something. It's kind of funny to call Neptune tangible, but in the spiritual realm, Neptune is very tangible. It's the very thing that we seek, that intangible, tangible. And the thing here is that you don't just have Neptune in this ninth place in your chart right now. You've got three other bodies. They're all minor planets. Technically, Neptune is the furthest planet from the sun. Everything else is something else. A minor planet, a Plutino, a Kuiper Belt object, a Centaur, whatever. And Neptune is currently being accompanied through your ninth house by three objects. Two of them are centaurs, orbit crossers that are kind of hot running transformational planets. One is called Chiron. One is called Nessus. Chiron and Nessus are grounding different sides of the spiritual polarity for you. Chiron is really stretching the sense of potential for what you can do, and there's a sense of a quest. One of the classic experiences of Chiron in the ninth is really liking to travel, and some astrologers have noted that it can be about visiting what you might think of as sacred spots in the world, needing to see them, and I would suggest that at least one or two visits to some sacred spot in the world would be in order with Chiron in the ninth house before this transit is over, to get to somewhere, whether you've been called to the pyramids of Mexico or Guatemala or pyramids of Egypt or any other place like that. Maybe you've been summoned to the Delphic Oracle. You've got to go put your feet on the ground there. Definitely give yourself one or two of those experiences. Nessus, on the other side of that, is saying that in order to have full access to spirituality, that is to say spiritual growth, you need to make contact with the shadow side of your nature, and that will help set free the light side of your nature. So it's almost as if you're seeking light, spend some time understanding the shadow side of your nature. I know there's a lot of spirituality that's all about love and light and all about only emphasizing the positive, and I think that there is a virtue to those teachings that is worth considering, because the law of attraction in many ways does work, and what you fixate on does manifest. But I'm not suggesting fixating on the shadow side, but really making friends with it, making peace with it, and understanding that as part of setting free the light inside you, that you may contact with some of the darker influences that are acting within your psyche. They may be materializing influences. They may be the impulse to control someone by some spiritual means. A lot of different possibilities. But ultimately, with Nessus, the key phrase that Melanie Reinhart came up with, the buck stops here, really does work very well with Nessus. And I think what Nessus in the ninth house is saying is that there is no one who is more responsible for your spiritual well-being than you are. This is your journey. It's your trip. It is your heart and soul that we are talking about. And there is no outer authority that can do much for you. You must be that authority. Now, speaking of the last of these planets accompanying Neptune, not a centaur planet. This is a classical Kuiper object with about a 300-year orbit. It's called Borysici. It is out just slightly beyond Pluto. So just for reference, Pluto's got about a 250-year orbit. Borysici has in the realm of, that's in the realm of like 290-ish, 300. So it's in a different class of planets. And it is about the power of belief and understanding the value that you put upon the truth. How do you determine the truth? How do you value the truth? What do you do with the paradox of whether what is true for you is true for other people? Lots of different questions in there. And Borysici is saying, ask these questions. It's implying that you have a need to understand the nature of spiritual deception, and the nature that in so many ways what we think of as spirituality is can be a real snow job and can add to the denial factor that you are trying to so diligently get out of. And there is a corresponding orientation coming from Nessus, which is saying, yeah, so there is a dark side to all of this spirituality stuff, and at least if you are not making an attempt to push that down, saying that thought's not good, I'm not going to think that thought. That thing I did is not good, I'm going to pretend I didn't do it, that whatever that may take, that if you're able at least to say to yourself, well, that's what I did, I don't approve of that anymore, that's who I was, I think I've grown, or I think I might need to grow. Now you're talking about having a healthy relationship to the dark side. And that, you know, I think that makes spiritual pursuits more real, and it allows the whole person that you are to come forward. And more important, I think, than anything, is that shadow material, a good term to look up, but shadow material, when cast aside, when cast off, when made separate, has a way of wreaking havoc. And I would suggest if there's anything in your life that's wreaking havoc, you probably already know that it has some connection to some set aside, cast away, or buried shadow material. And it would be, you know, perhaps awesome if you were to unbury that and find out that it's really not worse than you think. Most of the time, it's not. Most of the time, it's easier to deal with. And once you've made a choice to do so, you are capable of getting the help you need and can set that part of yourself free. You have good reason to do so. There is so much going for you. This big time in your life can produce big, or certainly very high quality, meaningful results for you. And I think it would be beautiful to recognize all the potential and take full responsibility for manifesting that potential for yourself. All right, I'm going to call it the end of part two here. I know I always have a few things I need to say about the astrology, so that's why I call part three Astrology Afterthoughts and Tarot. So I will probably sleep on this and wake up in the morning, and having let my unconscious percolate and ruminate on everything that I've said, do some astrology afterthoughts, and then get out the James Wanless Tarot and look at what those cards say. All right, a pleasure once again. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.